This is an intimate subject. It's not academic, and it's personal. This workshop is entitled The Poetry and Drama of Growing Old. And it's entitled that for two reasons. One, I have a burden or a passion for people who are growing old. Two, I'm a poet, I'm a writer. And I like to combine those two things and come up with a statement that we need to be closer in touch with the aging. As a matter of fact, there's no way I could even try and play this off academically because it's downright personal. I feel a lot of things. I'm living a lot of things concerning older people in my life. And yesterday I shared some things. So those of you who were here yesterday, you'll hear some repeats, but you'll hear some new stuff too. I want to put you in the frame of mind of a scriptural command. It's not only a privilege that we have older people in our lives, but God has commanded that we behave toward them a certain way, that we show them respect, and that we take care of them, and that we love them. Galatians 6:2 simply tells us, bear ye one another's burdens, thereby fulfilling the law of God. That goes for everybody. Your problems are supposed to be mine to a certain extent. Mine are supposed to be yours. I'm supposed to care about what happens to you. In this case, it's what happens to you once you've grown older. Deuteronomy 5:16 simply says, honor your father and your mother according to the law of God so that it'll go well with you in the land your father's given you. So there are some promises connected. Whenever God commands something of us, he gives us a promise. You do this thing, you obey, and you reap some benefits. Now, in my work, I talked a bit yesterday, and I'm just going to recap because the people who are just coming today need to know just a little bit about what we talked about. In my work in convalescent homes, I have discovered basically two kinds of people. Older people shut in, can't get out, and shut out. And I distinguished by saying that it's obvious when someone's in a convalescent home that they're shut in. And when they're in their own home and they can't get around, we refer to them as shut-ins, people who can't come to us. So we have to go to them. But I also made the distinction that there are people right in our homes who are right under our noses who are in our lives every day who are shut out simply because we don't let them in. I wrote these three categories down because in my experiences, what I have seen is that we have made some assumptions about old people, people who are growing old. That is, that they don't want intimacy with us. Two, that they don't need laughter. Three, that they don't have wisdom. And these are some pretty serious errors. And as long as there's breath in me, and I did honestly own up to the fact that I am gradually moving into this category. I was sharing yesterday that there was a time when I did this workshop, when I talked about this, I was talking about some people over here. It had nothing to do with me. I could reach out and touch them and put other people in touch with them. But it's gotten to the place since July 13th, 1990, when I turned 40-some-odd years, very odd years, in fact, too close to 50. I'm comfortable for it. I had to, when I got ready to come here, I had to sit myself down and say, Leona, guess what? You're one of them. So when you give this workshop, you're investing, girl. Make no bones about it. You are now going to tell some folk what you want them to do for you because you're getting there. And I'm reminded by this, the beautiful sister here, older sister whom I respect and only known her for a little while, that I'm still a child. And I like that. So before you leave, would you please say that to me again? I need to hear that. But a rude awakening, and I don't mean rude in that I'm afraid of it. I may rude in that it hit me suddenly. You are, yes, growing old. Praise God Almighty, because you know why? The alternative.
Yeah.
I often think about the alternative. Okay. But, and I want to recap some examples here, very quickly. Intimacy. The difference in saying, I had a bad day, to an older person, and in saying, you know, it's just getting so hard, I don't know what to do about it. I have no idea how to handle this. And letting them in. The difference in going into a room where a sick person is and opening the Venetian blinds to let the sun in and taking some in yourself. The difference in straightening the covers on the bed and sitting on the bed. When you straighten the covers on the bed, you want it to look neat and you want them to be comfortable, and they need that. Oh, but how powerful, how beautiful the person who just sits on the bed and rumples up the sheets. Any old person would much rather have rumpled up sheets in your presence, any sick person, than nice smooth sheets and you out the door saying, okay, I'll be back in a little while. Be comfortable. Okay? It reminds me of what James says in his epistle about works and faith. And it's easy to say to someone, have a good day and be warm and well fed, than it is sometimes to go out of your way to see that that happens for them. And that's the way we are sometimes with older people. It is much easier to keep that distance. Yes, from my experience, they want that intimacy. They still want us to cry on their shoulders. There are times when we feel like we need to protect them. Here are these people with all this wisdom, with all these experiences, who have gone through all these things, and all of a sudden they can't handle it anymore. They have gotten us there, but all of a sudden we feel as though we need to protect them from the whole world, that they can't handle it now. She could handle it when she was 50. But now that she's 75, I've got to protect her from the world. To a certain extent, it's obvious when someone's sick and there are other complications. We have to be aware of that. But I would lay my money on it every time. That when I approach the woman across the street and the man sitting on his porch, he would like to hear a little bit about, what did you do about it that day that boy got into that fight? He would want me to tell him how I handled that, rather than say, okay, it's okay, now it's all over. We have these little ways of shutting them out. Take my word for it, they want this. Laughter. We heard yesterday some of the stories. I'm going to ask for some more. Of older people with beautiful senses of humor. Yesterday. You mind if I use you as a...
No, I don't. I feel special.
Okay. Yesterday, as you were talking, I mean, your sense of humor came through. The longer you live, I would imagine, the more sharply your sense of humor becomes. Because you see a lot to laugh at, don't you? But a lot to cry about, too. But at the same time, I can't help but believe that the reason that most people are still around and happy and producing is because they found a way to laugh through some of the painful situations. Am I off the mark?
I think one thing that we should mention there is that the reason I enjoy laughing, I like laughing if you're laughing with me, not
yes.
at me.
Absolutely. Excellent point. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, that's a real definition of a sense of humor, is the ability to laugh at yourself in your own situation
mm-hmm.
and laugh yourself through difficulty.
That's
They've studied survival, people that survive prison camp,
mm-hmm.
and they have a common characteristic. They have many that are not in common, but they
mm-hmm.
have one in common, and that is a well-cultivated sense of humor, the ability to laugh at their own situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most older people I know exhibit that very well.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what you're doing is a cruel number on somebody mm-hmm. At someone else's expense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sharp difference between comedy mm-hmm. and a sense of humor.
Yeah.
because most comedians don't laugh at, a lot of them don't laugh at themselves, they're laughing at everyone else. Wisdom, to recap one more time. Who told us that by the time a person got to the place where they gathered enough information to share with the rest of the world, we should shut them out? We seem to need to cut away from the branch, as I say, before the sap stops flowing, and leave all the wisdom there. If you want to take something that I'm saying today and give it to a younger person in your life, to give it to yourself, go home and tell a child of yours to sit at the feet of an older person. Sometimes around the ages of 13, and I talk to the young people in my school about this all the time, it's not just about teaching English, it's about teaching life. 13, 14, 15, I don't think they mean to be cruel. I don't think they mean to disconnect, but I think an automatic disconnection happens simply because their peers, there are other things that they were not allowed to do before they can do now. The other belief systems, their own belief system is developed, and that's the age in which you probably won't find your children around their grandparents or older people in the church, older people, period. Here at Holden, I'd love to see, and I had often thought of offering a workshop that does just that, that just puts them in the room together, lock the door if I have to, just put them in the room together to talk. So we need, I need to sit at your feet more often, you representing an older woman. There may be a child in your life who could sit at my feet, but to keep the stories going and keep the wisdom flowing. So these are three very precious things that I, in my experience with older people, have seen. That we have created some assumptions, some false assumptions about. Okay? Now I'm ready to give you a little story before I get into the poetry. I want to tell you about a love affair between a little boy and an old woman. This affair eventually became the center of a play that I wrote called The Old Lady and the Ballet Boy. Jamar Welch. That's my son. He was here a couple years ago. He's 16 now. But when Jamar was 5, we noticed that he had a special thing for older people. And I guess there are certain things in the genes. They're in there. My parents were that way. They always helped older people. I'm that way. My daughter and this particular son, he loves older people. I remember, I can see it very clearly. We went to Northport, Alabama, where my husband's from, and we went down this long country road. I'm a city girl myself, and I always say that because my husband and his friends declare that I'm about as country as. Am I a city girl? Mm-hmm. What happened yesterday? You want to tell them what happened when we walked? We took a long walk into the woods, and I got scared of some things. She comes out with, "You got to be a city girl, right?"
I said, "But it's relative. You know, you look on in the country. Yeah, okay. Used to branches being close together, and Leona's."
I heard somebody go, "Shh." So I have to own up.
This is a country girl.
A country girl.
We're okay. In the woods together. You ain't nothing scares her.
I believe this. Anyway, we went down this long country road, and at the end of the road was a barbecue stand, and this is a hangout, and in the middle of the floor, sitting there, was an old woman in a wheelchair. Jamar was about, I think I can safely say he was 7. And there were children all around. And this was typical of him at the time. And he walked over to the lady, he went straight to her, she was a stranger. And he put his hand on the back of the wheelchair. And he said, "You don't have any friends, do you? You don't have anybody to be with you?" And she said, "No, son, I don't." And he said, "Well, I'll be your friend." And he held out his hand. And she took his hand, and they sat there. And all the other kids jumped up on the stand to get their potato chips and their soda water, right? And I took a mental picture of that. that became the old lady and the ballet boy. And since we're talking about the poetry and drama of growing old, I'm going to tell you basically what that play was about. Jamar actually was the person, because at this particular time he was taking ballet. Now this child was playing baseball and ballet. You want to talk about combining things in life. He would be on the baseball field doing his his ballet stuff while he was waiting for the ball to come, right? But I didn't believe he wanted to take it, but he started going into the library, finding books about ballet. And then I began to take him seriously. So he took it for a little while, and baseball took over. But the story is of a boy who's going to be involved in a performance, a ballet performance, and he has to sell tickets. And he goes to the house of this old recluse. And in her language, she says, "Boy, I don't buy nothing, I don't sell nothing. And y'all all the time coming around here, bother me, chunking rocks and grown-ups just being nosy, want to know what it's all about, and kids just want to bother me, chunking rocks at me." And he said, "But I don't chunk rocks." And so it goes on from there, and she resists him for a long time. She would open the door just a little ways, and he was persistent. He kept coming back. And eventually she talked to him. And she wanted to know why he was studying ballet. "God wanted you to dance, he put music in your veins," or something. And he said, "But I do have music in my veins." And he's very sharp about who he is. And eventually she begins to like him. Tragically, she's mugged one day in her home, and just at the point where she's coming out, and she goes back into the shell. She won't talk to anyone. Jamal is the kid who's very upset that this woman won't talk to him. She won't buy the ticket. I mean, she won't use her ticket to come to the dance. He keeps going back to her, standing, just watching her and talking at her. And one of the conversations that's going on, she keeps looking at him and trying to be hard and turning away and pretending that she doesn't hear him, but he breaks through with words like this. "I know somebody did a wrong thing to you, but somebody in this world just might love you." And that's when she turns and says, "Boy, you know what love is?" And he runs over and says, "You talked." And she clams up again. And then he gets angry, and he walks away, and he talks very sharp to her. And again he shouts, "Somebody just might love you." And then he goes over to the chair, and she says a couple of words to him again. And he gets happy. He says, "If the lady won't go to the ballet will come to the lady." And he helps her up, and they dance a little thing there. And he has broken through simply by his persistence and his utter love for older people and his belief in himself. He shared himself with this older person in a way that she couldn't resist. There's a scene where she opens the house, and everybody's there helping her to paint the house. And this is to represent that she's coming out now, and she's letting people in. And there's this moment where somebody does throw a rock. Everybody's happy painting the house, and people are finally able to come in. And everybody's tensed that she's going to get upset again. But she reacts differently. She says, "Bring that boy over here." And the boy, "You hungry? Take him back there and him and his cat too and scrub him up." And it's humor because it releases the tension. Jamal has actually made a difference in this woman's life. And I tell that story because I can't impress on you or anyone else enough in words how crucial it is. This poetry isn't just poetry to me. This poetry is life. I only use it as a means to get into people's hearts about older people. And what I want to do right now is stop for a few minutes. I promise you some poetry, I'm going to get to it. But I want to stop for a few minutes and do what we did yesterday, but I don't want to wait until the end. I want you to think about these categories. And I want you to think about a person that you know right now. And yesterday we talked about celebrating. You told me people that you would celebrate, and you told me why. Those of you who were here yesterday might know of a different person. And those of you who are today, is there someone that you know needs that, or you can share this with? Is there an older person that you know you get this from? Is there an older person that you know you either give, or they give this to someone else? Tell us, who are you going to celebrate today? Just a couple of seconds, think about it. Give us a chance to celebrate someone with you.
I'd like to celebrate my Aunt Maria.
Aunt Maria.
She's now 87 years old and has just moved into a nursing home. I helped her clean out her apartment, and she gave her precious belongings to all her nieces and nephews. And let me just back up. Mm-hmm. She's my mother's sister. She never married. She had a beautiful face, but she had buck teeth. Mm-hmm. And she always lived with that feeling that she was ugly. She wanted to become a nurse, but she grew up in the Depression and there was no money. And so instead of becoming a certified nurse, mm-hmm. she went into people's homes and took care of new mothers and their babies. And she lived her life through other people. Mm-hmm. She loved her doctor. She loved her pastor. Always she... I can always remember Aunt Marie talking about her pastor. It was almost like she had a love affair with her pastor.
Well, the little boy had one. Mm-hmm. You can use love affair in it. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's right. But Aunt Marie gave me something special because she was very close to our family. We just really brought her in. She was part of us. Mm-hmm. And she made each one of us feel very, very special. And she was always a listener. And she did a lot of laughing. Mm-hmm. And she made me feel like I was so cute and I was so clever just by her gales of laughter. And mm-hmm. I was hungry for it. Mm-hmm. What else about her?
Well, that's quite a lot right there.
Yeah. She's just really lived her life through her nephews and nieces, and mm-hmm. has remembered our birthdays and our children's birthdays with a dollar bill and a greeting card all these years. The kids always knew they'd get a dollar bill from Aunt Marie.
You know, when living her life through her nieces and nephews, I really believe, and I've said this to some people who've never been married, I really believe that God has set aside some people to nurture and to mother other people's children, because God knows that there is no mother on this earth who can give the child everything. And I like to think of them, supplementary mothers or something. But giving something, maybe something I can't.
There's also something about aunts and grandparents that they can say things that mom and dad can't.
Yeah. When I was a teenager and I was in love with this boy that my mother did not like, he was not from a Christian home, and there was a real tension there. Mm-hmm. I could go to Aunt Marie and I could talk to her about mm-hmm. it. And I felt like, it was like the emotional thing was not as mm-hmm. tense as it was with my mother.
Yes. That's true, because the thing I read yesterday, my grandmother, mm-hmm. and she could say things to me that I think, and what you're saying is, I would hear it, and I would hear from my mother. Oh, okay, well, Nana said that. Well, shucks, not Nana said it. That's something to deal with. Is it because mothers are always harping on you? Or is it because mothers are so close, they don't always know how to say it? You was going to say.
I was going to wait till you're finished.
I was just thinking behind,
I didn't know if you were done.
No.
But I really concur with what you're saying, and then I'll get on with it and celebrate, because my daughter has such a bond with my parents that sometimes I get jumped. Yes, and she can sit and talk to them, and my father will spend hours with her and will give her the kind of affection and attention that mm-hmm. He never really gave me. He was the strong, force, and I guess wanted it to be like that. But as I think through it, sometimes I think that he's loving me through her.
Hmm. That makes sense.
They even have a different kind of relationship than my father and my six-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that, there's something about LaTanya and he that are just, I don't know what it is.
It's just plain old love. Really. Any other comments?
I want to celebrate an elder of the. Where were you through?
I was going to celebrate.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was going to celebrate an elder of the Yakima tribe that I became to know very well. And I was thinking about the laughter and the wisdom, particularly that he shared with us, that was almost profound. He's shriveled, arthritic, and he sits at the head of their beautiful council table, which is a carved Indian arrowhead. You sit at the sculptured places in the arrowhead. He always sits at the head in his wheelchair. And I first thought that he was asleep or senile, and he would nod off and until his secretary would bring him papers to sign for the tribe while the meeting was going on, and he read every word, and I knew he was a good executive. But he's ageless, but well in his 90s. But Watson listened through a whole day where the two chiefs of the Wenatchee National Forest, which is how they treated us because we went to a chief-to-chief relationship and quit sending emissaries. And so then we communicated. And so Watson sat through and never spoke, and they were deferential to him, but he rarely spoke. He'd nod and they'd go on with other business. And somewhere in the medium of the meeting, we were talking about taking them out the next day, and they had been talking all morning about the rights for their original gathering places on what was now the National Forest, in rather militant tones, that we had to give them access. And so we were listening them through, and we were gonna go look for those places with them the next day. And so they asked me, well, what do we need to take for lunch? And I said, well, you've convinced me that you know so much about gathering, you will feed us. And Watson just came along in his wheelchair and he said, if Moses Jim, which was a white man's name given to the Middle Age Indian, if Moses Jim had to feed you, you would starve to death from eating vegetables. Yeah. So so his humor was wonderful, and the timing was so good.
But he made a point too, didn't he?
But his wisdom at the end. They turned to him, and at the very end of the meeting, we'd gone at least 6 hours with just discussion and a lot of listening. And it raised to a rather militant position, and with the suggestion that if they couldn't have all the things they wanted, they'd have to go to court. And they then turned to Watson to close this, and the chief said, I have these words to share with my white brothers, and he was talking to his red brothers. He said, the Yakima have gone to the white man's court 10 times. 10 times the white judge has ruled in favor of the Yakima. 10 times the Yakima Nation has lost in the white man's court a little of its nation. And so the profound wisdom that came from him to his red fellow chiefs, that was not the way to settle differences because they were a nation. They didn't belong in our court. And he then said, it is not our desire to go to court with the chiefs of the Wenatchee National Forest. It is a final way to work together. And so that when you talk about wisdom,
yes,
there are some very old chiefs, but still his juniors, that felt his wisdom at that time, and we certainly did.
Somehow I think of it as a kind of a silent wisdom until the time to speak comes. Is that part of the wisdom, even?
It's part of the wisdom.
Knowing when to.
And I think maybe their lack of a sense of urgency that we carry.
Yeah, right, okay. Now, are you going old enough to have developed the kind of sense of humor that allows you to say what you just said?
57.
That's humor, right?
Well, I'm young.
Okay.
Because I think I am.
We're going to back that back and forth. Okay, you were going to celebrate someone
now.
Wait just a minute. We were supposed to have been celebrating these people, all the people whose names have been spoken. Please say them again. Aunt Maria. Aunt Maria.
Watson Pildes.
Okay, we celebrate them. people, say the people at Holden Village have celebrated you, that we have shared. And I'm serious about this because for me, when I listen to this, I'm getting to know some people I might not ever see. But I'm getting a little piece of their lives. And that enriches mine as well.
Go ahead. And the person I wanted to celebrate is my mother, who will be turning 81 next month. Mm-hmm. And she is in a very depressed state, mm-hmm. has been this way for about 2 or 3 years because of her health. Mm-hmm. But what she's always sustained and maintained was her capacity to love. Mm. And it's always been unconditional. Mm-hmm. And through all the disappointment that she's encountered with her kids and sadness and that, she's mm-hmm. always, I've never felt that she's ever stopped loving me. And I'd like to celebrate that. Edith.
Huh?
Edith.
Edith. And the key word there for me being unconditional. I don't know, most of us haven't learned that. And it's hard for mothers to learn it, too, for that matter. And I know we go through kinds of judgments with our children that if you type. We don't like to think of ourselves as doing it, but we do. But to be able to even say that, you know that your mother loved you unconditionally, is great. Is there anyone else who wishes to celebrate someone before I celebrate these women here?
I want to mention my grandmother.
Grandmother, okay.
Her name is Carrie.
Carrie.
And we celebrate her a little bit every day because we named our daughter for her.
Oh, okay. Good. All right.
She'll be 97, I think, in October. Oh. And
bless her.
More on the wisdom side than the laughter side or the intimacy side mm-hmm. of my grandmother. She was a maid and a cook all of her life, her professional life. And when she talks about the days when she was still working, which already seem ancient to me, I mean, she's been retired a long time, obviously. Mm-hmm. The thing that she always says is that, yes, I work for these people, but they always called me Mrs. Nash. They called me Carrie. Mm-hmm. Some of those things, and when she talks about the changes that she's seen in her 96, almost 97 years, mm-hmm. What's stable and what's not, and what to worry about and what not to worry mm-hmm. about. It's been a help.
Have you, my grandmother died before we got to do any of this, and I only have one grandparent. Do you by any chance, besides in your heart and in your mind, record anything?
My cousin has done that.
And I regret to this day, they didn't have more intimate conversations where I really picked up on a lot of the wisdom. I mean, I took it as a child as I was growing, and it became a part of me. But then I felt that there should have been that moment. I should have made an assertive effort to get something else. Yeah. Let's celebrate. 97 years old. Carrie. Can't forget that because we've seen little Carrie running around. Okay. You were going to celebrate someone.
Well, this isn't really a relationship I have. It's more of a little love affair that happened with mm-hmm. my daughter.
Okay.
There's an old Chinese couple that live across the street from us that speak no English. And when she was really young, just able to cross the street, 4 and 5 years old, she would go out and walk up and down the street with this man, and they would hold hands. And they couldn't speak the same language, but they might share a few words, like hot or cold or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now she's 10, and that's all gone. And it's unfortunate to see mm-hmm. children grow up, and these things are not nearly
yes.
as easy for them uh-huh. as when they're little.
Are the people still there in proximity?
Although he's not as well, so he's not out walking up uh-huh. and down the street, so that
the does she remember
their relationship is not there. Does she remember that? Yes, I think she does. Uh-huh. Yeah, she does.
Yeah, that.
And it was always so fun to watch them.
Yes.
Go up and down the street together and just share a few words.
You know, you might you don't see it happening, but you'd be surprised how she might remember it and keep it in her heart. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for that moment, it was there and needed to be there. And we like to linger and hold on to those things, but sometimes I believe that they linger even in spite of ourselves, and in spite of the fact that they seem to go away. I think that the effects of those things linger, and somewhere, and I remember even now, I look back in my mind, and there are some moments that I couldn't have held on to intentionally, that they just stayed there. I'm going to celebrate some women here. Hands in the Mirror, for those of you who weren't here yesterday, is a Coria poem. All of these are plays in here, but mine is a bit different. And it was performed, University of Amherst in Ohio, and I have yet to really see a production of it. But it's danced, and the emphasis is on the hands and the roles that these women have played in our lives. And there are seven poems, and they each portray a different role. Yesterday I read the prologue for you. Today I'm going to read several more poems, and tomorrow I'm going to read some more poems. And all of these are not all the same women. The women that I have seen, known, a couple I have loved. I read about my grandmother yesterday. However, I'm going to start today with one called Poem of Birthing. Now let me tell you this little story. My grandmother was the midwife for two of us. There were nine of us. And I was told a story that was sort of sad, that the midwife wouldn't come because my daddy didn't have the money at the time. And it was pay up or no baby. I mean, let's face it, baby's coming, right? And in one instance, I think I heard something about bad weather and all this stuff. But one, my sister was born breech. That's when the feet come first. And my brother was born with the cord around his neck. And the funny thing about him is this. Whenever he would get out of hand, I mean, I think Bill Cosby was around listening to my grandmother talk. But because whenever he got out of hand, there was an expression, it was managed. When a black boy acted more like a man, he was told, don't be so mannish. And the girl was said, don't be so fast, right? We were told that. Well, when he got mannish, she would say, boy, I was the first one to put my hands on you, and I'll be the last. I brought you in, and I will take you out and fast. Right? And I know Bill Cosby must have gotten that, because that's one of his things. And he was straightened up. Okay. Poem of Birthing. The rain was pouring down faster than the wind could whip. Lightning flashing against the house, flashing across the room, across her belly. Belly big and heaving, heavy and birthing pains, hard and fast as the rain and the lightning. Won't be no midwife out tonight. Not before it lets up a bit anyway. Grandma was in the room with her, watching like a mother lion, peering at the door of the cave, keeping an eye on her cubs. It's grandmama watching and counting the minutes in her mind, knowing just when it's time, pacing the floor in a way that nobody knows is a pace, and that she's counting the time. Did it before, Lord willing, gonna do it again. Birthing pains, getting stronger, poor child in misery, taking it real good though. It's a mite bit harder for her this time than before. Don't expect she got two coming, Lord, don't expect she do. Hot water boiling faster than the rain pouring, louder than the thunder clapping over the roof. Grandmama turned it down low and started in pacing the floor, pacing like nobody will know. Grandmama's hands at her side, ready, just in case the lightning beats out the midwife, just in case. Hands, olive, sturdy, puff veins showing through smooth wrinkles on top, ready, just in case. Grandmama's hands moving across the floor in a birthing time rhythm, moving slow and steady in a pace can't nobody tell about. Rain harder, thunder getting angry and loud, lightning flashing across her belly, belly tighter than a conga drum. She groaning, doubling up, tightening fist in a mercy cry, Lord, Lord, Lord. That's the word. Grandmama's hands smooth wrinkles on top, moving fast and steady. Now, I wasn't there, but I declare it had to be that way, right? Little imagination. Okay, we celebrate Nana, because that was Nana. Everybody called her that. People who just meeting her for the first time. All of her grandchildren. As a matter of fact, she's the only grandparent I ever knew. My mother's side, they were dead. And Nana was it. The lady in the store, hi Nana. The lady at church, hi Nana. Nana, this is my friend. My friend says, hi Nana. And so she comes that for everybody. That's who was in this particular poem. This next poem, some of you met Mary Jane McDade yesterday. Mary Jane McDade was the woman. The extended family experience does go on in the black community, in spite of the fact that sometimes we become discouraged and think that we've lost it completely. We still have some of it. She was like a grandmother to my children. And my husband and I, we had two children at that time. And I told that story yesterday about her being the first one to give my son greens and fish because she thought that the junior food that I had left just wasn't enough for the poor boy. And she said, boy, that girl, that boy's hungry. And I felt so foolish. But in case, I learned something, and he's been eating fish and greens ever since. Okay, Mary Jane McDade. I told the story that she didn't know her age. I told the story that Mary Jane McDade had a lot of wisdom she shared with me in that room she lived in front of us, and that her philosophy was, we got to live and let live. And that didn't mean I'm going to leave you alone and you leave me alone. That meant I'm going to make it possible for you to live, and you're going to make it possible for me to live. Okay. Now, I won't reread the poem to her as I did yesterday. I'm just going to get into this particular thing here. Actually, it's called, I'm skipping, I'm going to go back. It's called Poem of Wisdom, Age, and Loneliness. We stand in the backyard, or mostly just sit in her quiet, dim, age-decorated room. Listening to her, I ask, not of her, but of life. Is loneliness a fair price to pay for age? Is loneliness a going price? Is loneliness a fair price to pay for having lived well? For having worked hard? For having chopped too much cotton? For having buried two sons? As we talk, I can see her life revolving before me, there in that quiet, dim, snuff-scented room. There among the 30 pictures of little black children tucked in one worn wooden frame on the wall, middle-aged men in zoot suits and a Jesus Christ calendar in the middle of it all. There over the torn plastic cloth on the one bureau drawer, over the sunken seat of the cushioned rocker, the enameled chip spittoon. Each sudden spurt of snuff is a mark of defiance, refusing to pay the price, determined to live and let live. Determined to keep up the love pact between her and my one-year-old son, and he, her assurance not to pay the price. Is loneliness a fair price to ask? Need she sign for such a bargain? Where will she mark her X? Who returns revenue for living and letting live? How high are the interest rates on loneliness? High as a welfare check? A state-bought box of snuff? White organdy curtains over torn window shades? High as a bathtub washing machine? High as a cup of hot coffee sipped each morning from a chipped china saucer? How far is the bargain center for age-brewed, highly fermented loneliness? As far as the corner meat store? The eye doctors? The front door mail slot? How does one collect? By cleaning out the dresser drawers and counting up the mixed-match stockings, burial insurance receipts, and hairpins? By adjusting the hearing aid now and then, winding the alarm clock, and cleaning out the dresser drawers again? What are the colors of loneliness? Hers come in black only, a very expensive kind. As we talk in the evening-tinted room, I can see the many shades of black, different shades for every year, but hers always in black. And the beauty and nature of growing old is punishable by life imprisonment. From Mrs. McDade, who's been gone about 15 years. But you know, every time I talk about her, it's really strange. It's like she's still there. I mean, she had that kind of an impact on my life. It's like she's still there. Okay, meet someone else. I want to stop for a minute. Comments, always. Don't want to do a one-woman show.
Where does she live?
She lived in Mobile, Alabama, where I... Oh, my God. Ooh, my mind went back. She lived in California. Yeah. I grew up, it was almost as though, you know, that connection was almost as though she should have been in Alabama. Mm-hmm. But she lived in California. And she had a sense of humor. I mean, I never will forget the time she gave my child, not the fish, she gave Derek some strange food. But she used to keep these bananas on the refrigerator. And I, growing up, I never ate bananas after they were, I know some people eat them, but after they were really brown. And I was sort of stupid about that. I remember she gave him one, and I thought, why is she giving my baby a rotten banana? And she said, some things get sweeter as they get older. And she says, bananas are just one of them. And she was telling me more than I thought at the time, right? Really. And that was wisdom in there. And it took me a while to decipher what she meant. Some things get sweeter. And indeed. Okay, so not to worry as we're growing older. I want to read Poem of the Cooking Pot. Anybody hungry? I'll go back home and eat some good stuff. Hey, I'm going to jump right into this one. Black-eyed pea juice simmering on the back eye of a stove. Yellow corn bubbling in the boiling pot. Chicken frying hot in the black cast iron fryer. Smell of grandma's kitchen tickling my nose and teasing me alive. Waking me up in the middle of a heated summer day. Bubbling, simmering vapors drifting out through the back window where I doze, waiting for the call. Y'all come on up. Her hands, moving faster than a yellow jacket from honeysuckle to honeysuckle. Her hands, stirring gravy, brown hands. A sea captain on the steer, whipping up a storm in the kitchen. Fingers, long, skinny, kneading dough of a masseuse in a biscuit parlor, kneading it to health. In orchestra, two hands, blending in harmony of taste, maestro, synchronizing flavors to the tune of boiling pots. Long fingers skipping over floured pork chops, sliding across yellow ears of corn, thumping at the edge of pots. Melodies of a cooking pot teasing my ears, waking me in the middle of a hot summer day. Hisses and bubbles bouncing keyboard-like on the breeze, drum majoring out the back door where I wait for a call. I said, y'all come on now. Her hands moving faster than a yellow jacket on a honeysuckle vine. Her hands stirring gravy brown hands, stirring up a melody for my hungry ears and nose. Gravy brown hands making songs for the cooking pot, ragtime keys, jazz time peas, hot jazz simmering under my nose, humming under my tongue, waking me up. Her hands stirring gravy brown hands, moving faster than a yellow jacket in a honeysuckle vine, stirring up a melody for my soul. Y'all hungry? Y'all hungry? They had black-eyed peas here the other day, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, small right. Dishes.
Yeah. But I got news for you. You know what? I sent them back at my table and refilled that dish about four times. I thought, what are they talking about, giving me black-eyed peas in a little dish like this for a whole table? Really? Okay, how are we doing on time? Because I got a couple more I want to share with you.
I'm going to share, because I don't want to get, I want to do the whole book today. Okay. This is my favorite. Poem of Prayerful Exuberance. Now, this is the one that I mentioned yesterday. The boy came home from the war with one foot. This, you'll hear in a minute the mother's faith and appreciation that he was home. She's praying. Lord, I'm here on my knees now before you. Tears of joy streaming down my face. Because, Lord, you done come down here and give me a helping hand. You done showed me a better way. You done give me a better day, and I'm here on my knees thanking you. My heart's about to jump out my bosom, and my feet's want to move all around for you. Hallelujah. I'm crying tears of joy for you, Lord, because you done sent me back, my son. He come home from the war, and all he's missing is a foot, and my heart is a-jumping out my bosom, Lord, because my baby boy is back. Back where he belonged, and one foot gone next to a whole life. Ain't too much to scrape about. And Lord, you done give Mary Louise a baby girl after she tried three times and lose them all. Glad I talked to you about it. Don't mind these tears none, Lord, because they gonna come a-raining. Gonna feel that wash tub full. And Lord, I ain't gonna feel no shame. Hallelujah. You done come through like I told him you would. My heart is a-jumping out my bosom, and I don't want to hold it back. Now there's corn and peas and potatoes in the field and squash, and the peach tree's doing real fine again this year. Praise you, Jesus. Praise you. Hannah's young and gone and got right before your eyes. He don't fight and cuss and steal like he used to only because you touched him. And I'm mighty glad you came. My heart is a-jumping out my bosom with gladness of you, Lord. And I'm here before you on my knees, thank you. Thank you for Sis Tilda's rheumatism acting all right here lately. Lord, here, take this here wash tub of tears. I say, take this here wash tub of tears and pour down your joy on me till I can't stand it no more. Till I drown in your goodness, Lord. My boy's home. My boy's home. One foot ain't too much to ask. My boy is home. Lord, we got peas and corn, and Sis Tilda doing just fine. I'm trembling before your goodness, Lord. Here, take this here wash tub of tears. And that's how I feel about old people.
You really know how to put words together.
Thanks, God. I wake up, sometimes I think, Lord, what would I do if you hadn't given me poetry? I'd go through this world stupid. Because I don't have too much else.
I think you do.
Well, he's taught me how to teach. He's taught me how to do my poetry. Right now, he's got to teach me how to get through to a few hard-headed kids. But he's teaching me that too. Frankly, I just want to say that about my own kids. We have six.
Six.
We have six, and the oldest is 24, and the youngest is 10. And you've met Michelle and Kyra. And I have to do this for my kids because there are too many of us who have too many parents who really have so much to cry about with their kids. So every chance I get, I say, we've been blessed. Our children have been good to us. In fact, when I look around, they've been easy on us. really. And we say that to them. If you have children, and you know what they're doing right, and you know that they're doing it right, please say it to them. Because there are so many out there who don't. I have parents. I know parents who just... they're on edge. If your children are doing anything right, tell them today. Go up to them and hug them and say, right on, son. Thank you for being good. And we told our kids, I had to tell my husband, men don't think this way sometimes, right? But when I brought it to his attention, you know, he's going, well, you did this, but now how come you didn't do this? And how come you, now when you going to do this? And didn't I tell you? And I said, now, wait a minute. I got too many parents, too many people out there who come and say, you got beautiful kids. You got obedient kids. Your 20-year-old son is very respectful. Now, how many times you hear that? So, I want you to sit down, kids. In the morning, I tell y'all, sit down. Now, before I fuss about some things I want to fuss about. Sit down. Thank you. This is what so-and-so said. This is what so-and-so said about me. Thank you. Thank you for being good to me, Bridget. Thank you, Jimmy, for being good to me. Thank you, Derek. Derek. I try to forget a few other things, but Derek's a middle child, has some problems. We came through it. Praise God for that. But talking about generation gaps, it starts there. It starts with your own children. And if we can do that in our families, then when they get out there in the world, they can make that connection, you know, with other people. Comments before we close? Comments? Questions? Yes.
I think sometimes one of the real roles of wisdom of our grandparents and older people in our lives is to help us see those teenagers more in perspective while we're tearing our hair out and ready to jump off the bridge. They're kind of sitting back on.
Yes.
Not the first time. It's not the first, it's not the last.
This is that, you know, this is true. And I find, how many children do you have?
Just two.
Do you find a different, what's the difference in their ages?
4 years.
Do you find a difference 14. in how you related to the first one and how you related to the next one, and that maybe you might just be a little bit more mellow now? And
everybody should have their second child first.
Right. Yes, and even down to our sixth one, it's like the older ones are saying, but Mama, if I had said that to you, or if I hadn't taken the garbage out, you would have, or Daddy would have. And now you just come out and say, who's on garbage? And you don't hear anybody say me, and you just keep walking. As before, I would go to the park and grab somebody by the ear, right? So you mellow out, is what you do. Yes?
Of the several poems that you wrote, what stood out in my mind was the expression that you used in regards to the hands.
Yeah.
There's something about, maybe it was just coincidental that you read those poems and then it happened to be that, you know, I focused in on those hands, but are the hands something that...
No, it's not coincidental. It's called Hands in the Mirror. And the seven poems, do focus on the hands. And I'm seeing these hands. And they are, you know, what have shaped us. And so actually this is a poem giving tribute to the hands. Giving tribute to them through their hands. Who was it had the song out, Grandma's Hands?
Yeah.
Let me tell you another little thing here about hands. sometimes we think about hands, when I think about them, you know, it's positive, but I declare, there's one instant of my grandmother's hands that I don't really want to think about too much. That was the one where she would take me and tuck my head between her legs. And my fanny is all that's exposed and her hands are working away. You couldn't get away. But you know something? I do believe that those hands were loving me then. I didn't know it. She'll say, girl, I'm going to teach you something. I'm going to teach you something right now. Come here. Yeah, I'm supposed to walk, you know. Bring me that switch over there. You got to bring your own. Sometimes you use your hands. But sometimes you have to go get that thing and bring it.
And go cut it.
Go cut it. Really. And then skin. Don't get a little one. Really. The worst kind was the kind that came from the peach tree, because those suckers don't break. You know that at some point the thing might break and you can go on, right? But the peach tree ones don't break. And my grandmother always going to read a poem tomorrow about the one she kept in her purse when we went to church.
Oh,
little different from Cheerios, huh?
And you know something that's interesting, because I carry food items. You know, you can, here, put this in your mouth, right? My grandmother would, if she wasn't sitting next to me, she'd do this. And she'd shut up. But the hands upon, I mean, scripture tells us to chastise. And she didn't spare the rod. She didn't kill us. We're not talking abuse. I mean, it's not, we're nowhere near abuse. This was loving me. And you let her tell it, doing what scripture says, to chastise me. And who knows? Who knows if I hadn't gotten that?